It's the Ag Ship Podcast. I'm Patrick Mayhorn, creator of the Ag Ship, a credentialed newsletter covering Utah State football, men's and women's basketball, and Olympic sports. You can subscribe at www.theagship.com at the six-month, $6 a month, or $10 a month tier. Those are the standard tiers, which gets you the cover stories, game notebooks, film or game previews, things of that nature, feature stories. The $10 tier is for the film stories, as well as the monthly Q&A podcast, which we will be recording here pretty soon. I'm going to send out a call for questions in the next couple of days. There's obviously a lot to talk about. We don't want to split the timeline here too much, because there is going to be developing news here within the next probably couple days at Utah State, but that will be coming as well if you are subscribed to that tier. If you are subscribed, thank you as always for your support. If not, again, you can go over to www.theagship.com and subscribe. I am joined, as always. I tried to do that all in one breath. I couldn't quite get through it, but I'm joined, as always, by co-host Parker Ballantyne. Parker, what's up, man?
What's up, Patrick? Yeah, you know what? When you can get that in one breath, that'll be impressive.
Yeah, I ended up doing the full promo. I think if I had just done the normal one, I could have gotten through. But I you know, snap decision, and I ended up doing the long
yeah.
one. What are you gonna do?
Kind of got greedy, a little bit of Icarus there. You're flying too close to the sun. You should have just taken the win when you could. But
I had a layup. But I had to go for the windmill. It didn't work. I should have just gone for the layup.
A tale as old as time, really. Yeah. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm a little tired, but I'm good. Yeah. It seems like we say this on every episode. They're all busy. It's always busy.
It's time for real though. This one's really busy.
This one is really especially very busy. There's
I'm back to sleeping about as much as I do during crossover season, if that tells you where we're at right now.
I've got a laundry basket full of clothes that need to go to the laundromat that I'm hoping I can get there before it closes at midnight tonight. That's where I'm at. Yeah. I'm the guy at the laundromat at 11 p.m.
I'm looking at a clock right now, and I'm just going to say good luck to you, bro.
Yeah, I think that might have to be a tomorrow morning exercise for me.
We're coming in on 10 o'clock. We're coming in hot on 10 o'clock, and you know how these go. So I wish you luck. I hope you can get there as well, because that means I'm in bed by that time. Yeah, so that'd be good.
I'm letting my poor girlfriend down. I told her I would go, and then it is what it is. I'll go tomorrow morning. It is what it is. It's fine. We'll do it live. We have a lot to talk about here. We have a lot to talk about in late March, and we still haven't talked about spring football. That is coming soon. We will be talking about spring football here sooner than later. But there is still basketball stuff to talk about. Utah State's season has come to a close with a round of 32 loss to Purdue. Frankly, I don't think anybody wants to hear us talk about that game. I don't think anybody wants to hear it. The game was what it was. Utah State was, it looked like it was really going to make a game of it for the first 10 minutes or so, and then it really did not make a game of it. Purdue was Purdue at its absolute best, and Utah State just kind of along for the ride, and I think really sort of shell-shocked by just how good Purdue was playing. And that's about it. That's about all the thoughts that I have on that game. It happens. Yeah. They got a one seed that played a one seed on that day.
Yeah, I mean, well, like you said, it is what it is, and you know what that game was? It was a game in the round of 32.
Yep.
And you know what? For now, that's good enough for me. I do think perhaps it's been just too long for this team. Someone probably should have told them that winning in the first round does mean you have another game.
Yeah.
But we're taking baby steps. So step one was win in the round of 32. Then you actually have to go or win in the round of 64. Then you actually have to go play in the round of 32. Mm-hmm. That's the part we're kind of waiting on. But no, like you said, it did look good for 10 minutes. I was actually really impressed with that first 10 minutes. Then I was not impressed. And that's, one seed played like a one seed like you said, that's how it went.
Yep. Let's hope that there is not another first round victory drought as long as the one that Utah State successfully snapped this year. I don't think there will be.
I don't think there will be.
Yeah,
count me out on that one.
That's... Yeah, but we'll see. Maybe we can move on to a round of 32 victory drought, and everybody will get really mad about that and think that Utah State is cursed or something. That would be at least a step up.
What a fun thing to be mad at. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we can't get past the Sweet 16. It's like, that's not a bad way to live. That is. There are worse ways to be as a program. The thing to remind yourself, no matter what happens to Utah State basketball, you could always be San Jose State, and Utah State has never been San Jose State, and it never will be. It's not going to happen.
That's true. I don't even think you have to look that far.
Yeah.
You could be Utah. To see a team.
You could be celebrating wins in the NIT right now.
I wasn't going to say it, but since you brought it up,
Look, they're the only team in Utah still playing, and it's not embarrassing to brag about that at all. It's not. It's definitely it seems like you all are really happy with the program that you have down there. That is for sure. You could be Utah, and Utah State is not Utah. It's a good basketball program. Season comes to a close with the loss to Purdue. Very shortly after, which I do honestly, we're going to talk about this in detail. I will preface this by saying, I'm glad that there's not a need to drag this out. There's not a need to take the whole week and, you know, waste everybody's time. There's just, if you're going to do it, get it done. And that's exactly what Danny Sprinkle did, as had been kind of rumored and whispered about for a month and a half now. Going back to early February was, I think, the first time we talked about it on this show, the first time that it started to crop up. Danny Sprinkle does indeed depart for the open job at Washington. Does so Monday morning, like 10 a.m.-ish local time. I appreciate that. I really do. I just, if you're going to do it, just do it. And this was not a secret. It was pretty well known that this was a serious possibility. Utah State was not caught off guard by this at all. It did what it could. Ultimately, Danny Sprinkle's contract, I've got sitting right in front of me here at Washington, guaranteed money from years 1 through 6, 6-year deal, first year, $3.2 million, and then it goes $3.3, $3.6, $3.8, $4 million, and $4.2 million over 6 years. That's a $22 million contract without bonuses, without anything like that. That's the base salary. Utah State can't match that. I'm not going to lie to you. Utah State can't match that. Very few schools in the country can pay that kind of money and are in a location that Danny Sprinkle is familiar with, that he has connections to. It is what it is. It was a massive offer. He has a huge NIL budget to work with there as well. It is what it is. I don't blame him. I don't blame him for taking it. That is quite the offer. That is quite the opportunity. He has aspirations to build a program on that level, to build a Big Ten powerhouse is the idea, essentially. And he got the chance. And I don't think that, you know, with the stock for him as high as it was, I don't think he was going to turn it down. And obviously he didn't, but he got it out of the way. He did it quickly. He didn't make everybody wait. And I appreciate that. Utah State, I think, probably appreciates that as well. Obviously, would have preferred to keep him. That would have been great for Utah State. But getting it out of the way quickly and clearing the lane for Utah State to then make the next steps forward makes it easier for everybody. And it's just it's a timing thing with the portal being open. Doing it quicker is better than waiting and slowly pulling off the Band-Aid. Just do it.
Yeah, the portal, by the way, I wasn't going to say this, but then you reminded me, the portal should not even be open right now.
No, it's ridiculous.
So for those that don't know, the portal opened. We talked about this, I think, in the context of women's basketball, but it opens for both at the same time. It opens like the Monday after conference championships, right? Like we were talking about
After Selection Sunday. Yeah, it was the day after.
That's right. The day after Selection Sunday. So we were talking about that in the context of women's basketball, and I just remember thinking this is way too fast, even at the time. But that's a side note. Danny Sprinkle rips the Band-Aid off. Like you said, it's better this way than being dragged out. It was very fast. Suspiciously fast is, I'll say it. I mean, come on. He doesn't coach her anymore. It's suspiciously fast, but yeah. I know there's people that are bothered at how fast they had that move. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, that's why he has an agent. I don't know, but But regardless, this is absolutely better than him sticking around, telling players he's going to stay, telling fans that he loves Logan, all that. Just go. And he did. I appreciate what he did here. He did something that hadn't been done in the time that I can remember. I got to respect it. I like that he never really said that he's here to stay. He just kind of left. And then, like you said, he opens that door up for whoever's coming in after him. So it does move pretty quickly. I will say that just like on my part, I feel like I moved pretty quickly with this too. I got a text that day from my dad at like noon, saying, you know, we saw this coming. Right. And so he was expressing to me like, man, like this sucks. I'm more bothered than I thought I would be. Like, you know, we all saw this coming and then still more bothered. By the time he got home from work that day, we were both fine. And I think that, I don't know if that quite sums up anybody else in the fan base here, but this is moving quickly. And I mean, to summarize what we're probably going to talk about for a good chunk of the rest of the show, Utah State basketball is in a really, really good position. And I feel really good about where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I you know, I think that people are also like, I'll say, I think people are right to be upset about some of the things that Danny did say when he got the job and throughout the season, then to leave after 1 year.
That's fair.
I also like, and this is not, you know, the things you say are the things that you say, and no matter what happens in the future, you still said them. But I really don't think that when Danny Sprinkle arrived in Logan and gave speeches about how he wanted to build a long-term program and you know, talked about Stu Morrill and did all of that, I really don't think that he was expecting to get $4 million or a $22 million contract on his desk from, you know, the school that his dad went to and is in the state that he was born in, you know, 4 months into the job. I don't think that he was anticipating that. And I don't really know that anybody could have anticipated that that would happen. And it was, like I said, just kind of one of those things where I don't necessarily think he was lying when he said that he wanted to be at Utah State for a longer period than just 1 year. Nobody goes to a job expecting to jump for, you know, a bigger job 1 year later, especially when you have no returning production.
Right.
It just kind of happened. And I don't think that, you know, it makes him both the beneficiary of the rapidness of this coaching cycle and of every coaching cycle and how quickly things can change. And also in the case of, you know, having to go back on stuff that he said, it makes him kind of the victim of it. You know, that's the way that this works. The time frame in the coaching carousel and the way that things can change so quickly can make fools of anybody. And it is just the nature of the beast with this stuff. And I don't think that he said that to try and, you know, then twist the knife on Utah State. It was an offer that he could not reasonably turn down given the aspirations that he has as a coach, as a person. You know, he just, it is what it is. It's bad timing for Utah State.
Right.
It stinks. It stinks that it happened. You know, that Utah State didn't get a longer run with him, but it's just, it's hard to argue with a guy taking that kind of offer for, you know, a job that he has connections to and a job that he obviously sees a lot of potential in. I honestly think I would have had a lot more issue with this had he gone to, as was kind of not really rumored, but had been talked about, had he jumped to like Vanderbilt or Oklahoma State, because those are bad jobs and that's a waste of everybody's time. Washington, at least he has connections to, and it could in theory be a good job. I can understand that one a lot more than I could understand like, oh, I took Oklahoma State or Vanderbilt. It's like, well, you're just going to be back here in 4 years at a different Mountain West school. Washington,
yeah,
you can talk yourself into. And that's the one he picked. So, you know, fair play is what it is.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. The speed of all of this, you know, you said it, like it can make fools of anybody. It sure made a fool of me. I'll be the first one to stick my hand up. Like, that's my bad. I did not see this one coming. We talked about it when this story started to break. I don't even know if break is the right word, but like when it started to slowly materialize on the horizon. I don't know. It was pretty fast actually. But when this started, I didn't see it. I did not see this happening. I thought he would stick around for one more year, at least. But his stock is very, very high right now. And that is very obvious in the amount of money that he's making. That is a contract that Utah State cannot match. It's a contract that Utah State has no business matching. And like you said, this moves fast. That goes both ways. And this is something that we don't like to talk about at Utah State. It's something we don't talk about at Utah State because we're really not familiar with this principle of having to fire coaches. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a good chance you only have ever lived through one head coach being fired on the men's side of things at Utah State. And he was fired for going 500 his final year. Mm-hmm. He only had one losing season. This is Tim Duryea, obviously, that we're talking about. It moves fast. And I understand the frustration. I know that it's happened, you know, Smith for three, Odom for two, Sprinkle for one. I understand. But you also have to understand where Sprinkle was, where the program was. There are a lot of scenarios where Danny Sprinkle is a one-year head coach anyways. He was hired by an interim AD for a school that didn't have a president at the time. That has temporary job written all over it. That has one-year rental written all over it. We just got the good side of that one-year rental. I don't have to use a lot of my imagination to imagine a scenario where an interim AD hires a head coach. That interim AD moves on, which is not the case here because Jerry's still with us, but that interim AD moves on and that head coach is fired at the end of the year for going 500, right? Like that is the nature of coaching basketball at the college level. It goes both ways. You sometimes leave after a year. Sometimes you're fired very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Tim Duryea was fired after 3 years. It goes both ways. You can't really blame him for, you know, striking while the iron was hot, so yep. to speak.
You never know if you'll get back to that as a coach.
His stock was higher than anybody's in the country. Like he was, you can't blame him. That was, he turned a good chunk of money into a huge, huge sum of money. Yeah. That's the name of the game, right? Like that's what he's doing here. So
yeah, I think he managed to negotiate a very small buyout at Washington as well, which is interesting, for pretty obvious reasons.
By the way, he also turned a pretty good chunk of change for us into a even bigger chunk of money. I think as like from a financial standpoint, he was a net positive. We paid him. Yeah, not even for a full year on a $800,000 salary.
Yeah,
and then he went out, got us two bids in the Mountain West or in the NCAA tournament, and then got bought out for almost $3 million.
Yep.
Not a bad investment, Jerry Bovee. Well done. Hats off to you.
No, you get that 1 year turnaround. You're feeling pretty good. If a stockbroker comes to you and says, hey, you can put $800,000 into this stock, and this less than a year later, 355 days from now, it'll be worth, you know, $3 million plus whatever residuals you get from the NCAA tournament, you feel pretty good about that investment. Okay, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, that works.
And the only recurring purchase is you have to buy some new basketball nets and then a bunch of new clipboards because they keep breaking.
Yeah,
that's your only ongoing expense. That's your management fee for this investment.
Yeah, yeah, that's not too bad.
Not bad.
That's not too bad.
If somebody offers you that, you should probably run.
Yeah.
Go the other way.
Yeah, they've got something sinister is happening. They're trying to win a Mountain West championship.
They're probably
for
from
you.
Provo,
watch out.
And they want you to join their pyramid team and run the other way.
Yeah, yeah, those deals don't usually actually go down that way in the state of Utah, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but this one it did. They found one that worked. So as Utah State moves forward from this, the immediate fallout. It's been not quite 48 hours, but more than
which
a
is
day.
A long time.
Yeah, 48 hours is a century in the transfer portal and in the post coach departure world. 48 hours is an unbelievable amount of time. We're not quite there. We will be there tomorrow morning, probably this morning as you're listening to this, because I don't imagine I'm going to post a podcast at midnight. But it's been about 48 hours since Danny Sprinkle's departure, and as of this is the time of year where we have to timestamp everything that we say on a podcast, just in case.
Right.
As of 10:08 p.m. Mountain Time on March 26th, Utah State has one player from its roster in the transfer portal, and he's not on scholarship. That would be Landon Brenchley. He was, as we were kind of joking before we started recording, Utah State could hire Coach K. It could hire Phil Jackson. It could hire like it could resurrect James Naismith himself and bring him in. He was a bad basketball coach. I don't know if people know that. He was a bad basketball coach. He's like the only coach in Kansas history with a losing record. Very funny.
That is my favorite piece of trivia, by the way.
Very
like,
good.
That's how I break ice at parties. Just like, like, hey, do you know the one Kansas coach that has a losing record? And then no one will talk to me. So it's awesome.
I was just thinking about that watching the NCAA tournament a couple days ago. I was like, man, James Naismith would have hated this. He didn't even like basketball that much. He thought wrestling was a better use of everybody's time. Everybody should just be doing gymnastics. This is dumb. Yeah, that...
It would be so funny to watch him just like force him to watch basketball, watch him to like watch the plague that he unleashed on this world. It would be beautiful.
Yeah.
He would feel like Oppenheimer with his invention.
He's watching the Virginia offense. Just like, no, this isn't right at all.
It's like, there's a non-zero chance that what I've created will destroy the entire world.
Yeah, Utah State could have hired or could hire or could have any basketball coach on the planet. Landon Brenchley was going to leave because Landon Brenchley is a walk-on at Utah State and he wants to play. He has one more year of college basketball left. I think he has deserved that. I think he's deserved that right. He is a good basketball player who just wasn't going to play at Utah State. He was an extremely valuable part of the locker room for these last couple years that he's been here. I think his brother is at Denver. I would guess that that's going to be a top option. His brother played a good amount at Denver. He wants to play though. And I don't think anybody can blame him for that. This is not a like, Sprinkle left. And so Landon Brenchley is going to follow him to Washington. Like Landon Brenchley is going to drop down to a low major or maybe a D2 school and he's going to play. That's the idea.
Yeah. If Landon Brenchley is enrolled at the University of Washington next year, he picked up a new sport. He's not going to go play for Washington. That's not the deal. And this is fine. Like this is the good side of the transfer portal where he wasn't going to get time. And I know we don't have a coach. We don't know what our roster looks like next year. There was really no amount of turnover that was going to end up with Landon Brenchley playing a role at Utah State. It's just Utah State's on a higher level of play, I think, than what he would get time, and he deserves time. Like you said, he's a fine basketball player. He deserves to play. It just wasn't going to happen at Utah State. This is the good side of the portal. He's going to go find somewhere, get another year of school under his belt, and play some basketball doing it. And like good for him. I hope to see him in the tournament next year, the way that we got to watch Rylan Jones this year. Happy trails, man. Like, best of luck.
Yeah, absolutely. Landon Brenchley got a degree and he got to spend several years, you know, playing basketball in the Spectrum, and that he got everything out of it that he could have possibly wanted. I don't think that as a walk-on, you could ask for a much better career than the one he has had, and now he's going to go play somewhere, and that's great. Again, like you said, that's one of the real positives that you can get from the portal, and there are many. There are a lot of stories like his.
Certainly.
Rylan Jones is not a walk-on, not a direct comparison, but Rylan Jones was not going to play at Utah State this year, and he found a place where he could play. He went to the NCAA tournament.
A transfer to Utah State, by the way. He started at Utah.
Yeah.
So.
It's moving up in the world.
Good for him.
Landon Brenchley in the portal. No one, as I said earlier, no one on scholarship has joined him as of right now, as of current recording. That is interesting. I will say that. I put a pin in.
If I were to tell you 2 weeks ago, in 2 weeks, Kayla Ard will be fired. And Danny Sprinkle will go to Washington, and on Tuesday night, one player will be in the transfer portal between the two teams. Mm-hmm. Would you believe me at all?
No. No, I don't. I don't think I would.
I'm perplexed by really both of those are very weird. I don't think there are any women's any players on the women's side in the portal. I haven't seen it.
So
that's
I do
very
have
weird,
I,
like both sides of these.
I did actually see something earlier today from this guy who he keeps track of like women's basketball transfers and coaching changes in a way that seems impossible. I don't know how he does it. He has like a full transfer portal tracker for every single Division One team. I don't
know. Which that is so impressive, by the way. Like, I'm not sure if our listeners know how it works. The portal is not like public.
Yeah.
It's not even like one of those things that's like exclusive to credentialed media members or journalists. Like,
yeah,
it's pretty much for players.
Yeah,
it's players only. Really.
Yeah, we don't have it. Coaches and players. There are a couple people who do have access to like a version of it. Like that's how like 247 and On3 and,
yeah,
and those guys have that stuff, and they have that updating, you know, pool of information. But this guy, I'm gonna shout out his actual blog name. Okay, it's just wbbblog.com. This guy Raul, who he keeps track of all of this stuff for every single team, which is absolutely crazy. I don't know how he does this. But he had it as three players from Utah State currently in the transfer portal. I've not seen any of these three announce, but he's getting it from somewhere. Tiaria Hill Brown, Bridget Mullings, and Macy Smith. I don't know if that's true, but Raul, I trust Raul inherently with my life because he does this for like Abilene Christian and UAB and Alabama and every school you could possibly have it running for. So he's getting it from somewhere. That's at most we're talking about three scholarship players,
yeah,
which is a small number. It's a small number. None of whom.
I'm bummed that I missed those, and I'm bummed that that my joke was just completely
sorry
by facts and logic.
Sorry.
Also, I mean, this is not the point of this podcast. None of those surprised me on the women's side.
Yeah.
More will come, but yeah. And moving back over to the matter at hand, it is very surprising that not surprising, but it is one of those things that. Really, Landon Brenchley? I mean, Landon Brenchley, as you said, was going to be in the portal at this time anyways, whether Sprinkle stayed or was replaced by anyone. And he's the only one. That is something to watch, I think.
Yeah. Yep. I would encourage people to keep an eye on that. That is interesting. I don't think that is what people were expecting when Sprinkle departed. I think that people were expecting that within 24 hours there would be a mass exodus. That's kind of what the precedent is when a coach leaves.
I was going to say that's happened, and it's happened recently.
Yeah,
so.
I don't remember exactly how soon it was that like Stephen Ashworth and Max Schulga and Sean Bairstow and all those guys announced. It might have been. I don't know that it was like immediate, but it was. It wasn't that long after Ryan Odom announced that he was leaving. And so far, not a peep. The players have been posting pictures on Instagram, like the collab pictures with the team account. Like a bunch of them have been doing this. And
yeah,
they're not announcing that they're leaving. They're just, you know, announcing that they were grateful for the season that they got to have and you know, for that, which is just interesting. I'm not going to tell you to read into that too much, but I am going to say just put a pin in that it's interesting, yeah, that the team has not done that. That paints an interesting backdrop for the coach search that is underway, and I would expect, and I don't think I'm saying anything new here. Scott Gerard, the excellent radio guy, has said something to a similar effect. A lot of people have said something to a similar effect. The search is moving very quickly. The search is.
Yeah.
This is not the first time that they heard about Danny Sprinkle maybe going to Washington. I'm going to tell you that they knew about it before Monday, just like everybody else on Earth did. I think.
Yeah.
it was not super quiet. They knew, they had done their homework. They were ready if they needed to be. And the search is far along. It is in the late stages. I would expect you will hear news on this, that we will be back on a podcast talking about a new head coach here within a couple of days. I think by the end of the week, probably. It's far along in development.
I'll say this. It's Tuesday right now, as we've said for like the fifth time on this show.
It is Tuesday.
The next time, yeah, if anyone's wondering when we're recording this, it's Tuesday.
Yeah.
The next time we record will be to announce a new head coach.
Yep.
And for those that, you know, are maybe new, we record basically once a week. And as Patrick mentioned at the top of the show, we are preparing to record very soon a question, you know, a Q&A show for our premium subscribers. Mm-hmm. The next time we get on a mic will most likely be, I'm confident saying that it'll most likely be to talk about a new head coach.
Yep. Yep. That is the assumption. That is the expectation. Yeah. That is what they are working towards. They do not want to waste time on this. Last year was an anomaly for a million reasons. It's not usually going to take that long. They were not caught off guard by this. They have candidates. They have been talking to candidates. They have been doing their due diligence on this. They did not, this was not a surprise. This will be done sooner than later. And I think that is just interesting to take in with the knowledge that nobody's in the portal, that the roster is intact. The staff is intact, save for Danny Sprinkle right now. I think that everybody is kind of in wait and see mode. That is a lot better than the alternative, which is that everybody is in get somewhere else as quick as possible mode.
And I also know just like one thing that is so different than this year than last year, you have to assume that the lines of communication at the university are strong and that those are open.
Yeah.
I don't think that was the case last year, and that's not to fault Jerry Bovee, who was running the program last year. He was handcuffed by a lot of what was going on around him. And this is something that we've talked about. We've talked around this point. Utah State has a very, very strong athletic program with really, really strong leadership. And the strength of this program does not necessarily, you know, the basketball program does not necessarily come from within. It comes from the entire program. And this is one of those moments that I think speaks to that. You have to assume, I'm not speaking from any knowledge at all, but you have to assume that the strong leadership and strong communication that they have is helping keep this team in wait and see mode rather than get out before the house collapses mode.
Yeah.
And we saw that last year. Like we saw, everybody sprinting to get out. This looks so, so, so different. And you have to assume that it is because of Diana Sabo and Jerry Bovee. Yeah. I can't say enough good about those two. And I will take any chance I get to point that out, that they're doing a great job.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't think I'm telling tales out of school here. I think people know this and could kind of see it even as it was unfolding. It was a mess last year. It was a mess, right? Not through anybody's fault. It was a mess. There was a giant mess there.
Anyways,
it was not the fault of anybody who was still there. It was a mess.
Ding, ding.
And it was disorganized and it was chaotic. And they did the best they could, short-staffed, without a president, without a full-time athletic director, and they got a really good coach, and, you know, it all worked out eventually. But it was not a great situation. It was not super stable. This is a very, very, very different circumstance here. This is not, it is not disorganized at all. It is very, very much organized. It is very much being run the way that you would want it to be run, being run concisely, quickly, with the kind of urgency and the kind of organization that is required of this sort of thing. And the players know that, the staff that's still there knows that, the administrators know that, potential candidates know that. It makes a world of difference to have, you know, people who are there, who are in control and can tell everybody who is not in control, just simmer down, stay calm. There's no reason to panic. We're going to get this figured out and then we're going to go from there. But for right now, just stay calm and trust that we can handle this. Utah State can say that this year. It can go and say
Absolutely.
That. Whereas last year, I don't think that it could have said that because it was not a standard circumstance and there was a giant mess. And somebody had to clean up the mess eventually. It was just kind of work around that big mess, and we'll go from there. It's not that right now. It's all I don't know what the right word would be. It's all cylinders firing here. It's
the way an athletic program is supposed to be. Right?
Yes.
Like last year, that was not the case, and this is something. This is not probably the podcast where we're going to dive into this, because we talk about the continued success of this basketball team a lot. If you need a reminder, we are happy. I'll speak for Patrick. We're happy to record an hour podcast about how good this basketball program has been over the years. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm going to do here, at least not directly or more than I already have. But Patrick, you made a point on Twitter, like, the spectrum doesn't go anywhere when a new coach takes a new job.
Yep.
And I think that is true. And I think that's not only true of the building, of the actual spectrum, it's true of the people inside it. It's true of the people around it. Yeah, sure. Administrators move around, but much slower. And I think what makes this program strong right now and has, you know, for years, is those pillars around the coach. Would it be good to have, would it be nice to have a long-term coach that can win every year? Yeah, it would. But it would also be good to have the things around a coach that make a team successful, you know?
Yep, for sure.
And that's what we have, and that's what they're putting on display right now. Sorry, yep. I don't mean to completely derail our conversation by talking about how good our team has been historically, but the things that you don't realize, you know, it's all about Ryan Odom, it's all about Craig Smith, it's all about Danny Sprinkle, because they're the head coach. The fans, the donors, the administrators, those are a lot more stable throughout the years. They don't jump around quite as often as head coaches. And that's not a new thing. I mean, coaches have always moved faster than administrators. And right now you are really seeing the strength of, in particular, our administration.
Yeah. And yeah, the thing that connects Utah State's basketball history through, I mean, going back to like the 50s, which is really when this run kind of started, which is crazy to be able to say that Utah State has a run of success that drives back to basically the 50s, and even there were some stretches in the 40s where they were really good.
Yeah,
they went to,
I was going to say, like, even probably before the 50s.
I have the media guide here on the floor next to me. I need to grab it and pull it up. But like, since it's been a really, really long time that Utah State basketball has been strong. And there's been like two losing coaches ever during that time. It's like Cohen Smith, and then there was the guy before, H. Cecil Baker, I think, had a losing record. Whitesides, I think, was the name. I'm going off the dome here. I don't know my 1940s Utah State basketball as well as I should, I guess.
You got you're right before Cecil Baker, Joseph Whiteside, he was, basically one of the only two losing coaches. You're right. I mean, that's something that people, I think, you know, to your point, a lot of people will correctly talk about this, the run that Utah State has been on since Stu Morrill.
Yep.
And then sometimes it's like the galaxy brain meme, where it's like the normal brain is like, oh, Utah State's been good since Stu Morrill. Well, first there's like the brain dead one that's like, Utah State's been good since Craig Smith.
Yeah.
And then there's like the normal brain that's like, no, it's been since Stu Morrill. Then there's the one guy who thinks he's really smart for saying, no, Larry Eustace before that was actually pretty good. And then like the truth, the galaxy brain one is like, you guys heard of Liddell Anderson?
Yeah.
Like, come on, what are we doing here?
Yeah, like, this is the house that Cecil built, baby. Come on.
Cecil Anderson. And, way back. Yeah, Dick Romney when he was coaching the basketball team. Come on, let's go.
They were still good. They've pretty much always been good, is the thing about Utah State basketball, is that since it has been a thing that they want to be good at, they've been good at it. And they were good with Liddell. They were good. Even briefly, they were decent with T.L. Plain, which is one of the weirdest hires in program history. Again, we're not going to do the whole history thing on this show, but
day we will. I told you we would do it. We will do that at some point.
They were good with Dutch Belknap, Rod Tuller. Who came after him? Cohen Smith, which we were not
not
as good. But then they bounced right back with was it Eustace after him, or was
Rod Tuller, Cohen Smith, Eustace.
Yeah, and then obviously Stu, and even the worst thing that can possibly happen, the 3-year run of Duryea, they're still fine. They're still like 500-ish, and they move on after being 500, and then they're right back to NCAA tournaments and being really good again. It's a really, really strong program, and the thing that connects all of those eras, all of those coaches, there there are two things. One is that they were coaches at Utah State. They were head coaches of the Utah State basketball program. And that's true of Danny Sprinkle and Ryan Odom and Craig Smith and everybody who I named before them. Two is that the fans of Utah State were the people who were cheering their teams on and who were filling the buildings that they were playing in, whether it was the Spectrum or the building before that. That does not change. The passion that Cache Valley has for basketball has been a constant for nearly a century, if not a century. It does not go away. It does not change. It's not movable. And even during down stretches, it just comes right back once they're good again. And they're good way more often than they aren't. And it's great to have really good head coaches. It's great to develop that connection with coaches for a fan base. It is a shame that the Danny Sprinkle era did not last longer than it did. I could say the same thing about Craig Smith and Ryan Odom. Sprinkle, I think, was probably the best of the three, at least in my mind. The best fit of the three. I think he's the most complete of the three. I also think he's going to be a superstar in college basketball. To get any amount of exposure to him is a positive for Utah State because he is just a force of nature. But they all still were the coaches at Utah State, and they were supported in the same way that every coach at Utah State is. And that support does not change. It doesn't change. The people in the stands will change. The student section will change. But it is always the same spirit that guides them. It is always the same exact... It is no different now than it was when they first started getting good as a program. It just is what it is. That's the way that the program is. That is the strength of the program, the secret of the program. And Stu Morrill would tell you that. Coaches who have left for bigger jobs recently would tell you that. Danny Sprinkle said that in his typo-ridden goodbye statement. They're not kidding when they say that. That is not coach speak. That is legitimately... There are very, very few schools in America that can tout the kind of support that Utah State has. And it makes more difference than you can possibly imagine. It is unbelievable the amount of impact that can have on the quality of a program, the amount of impact that it has had on the quality of the program at Utah State. As long as Cache Valley is still on the map and as long as basketball is still being played, Utah State basketball will find a way. It just does.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, this is something we could talk about all day. I mean, this is seriously, we seriously could record a full hour and a half podcast about how good the history of Utah State basketball has been, and you would still not quite get it. Like, you still would not quite understand just how good this team has been.
Yeah.
For a small team in Utah, in Logan, Utah, this team has always overperformed. And you know, one thing that, okay, you had a great, you had a winning record with Stu Morrill. You were playing cupcakes. We were in the Big West. We were cupcakes. We were still overperforming. Like, we were a small school in the Big West, and we were still overperforming. We have never underperformed what our potential is. The standard has just gotten higher, you know, as we've gone from conference to conference, you know, Big West, WAC, Mountain West now. You said it. Like, there are two things that stay the same that make these teams successful, that make these coaches successful. The first one is that they coach Utah State basketball.
Yep.
That will be true of the next guy. It just will be. Yep. I will say it right now. I don't know his name. He will be successful at Utah State. And if he's not, I can show you what happens. He will not be here for more than 3 years.
Yep.
And then we will return to winning.
Yep.
That is just what we do here. At the level that we are at, we will always overperform. And that's just something that it's awesome to be a part of.
Yeah, it is. I'm rolling through in my head. I don't know that there are a ton of comparable programs for the level that Utah State has never been a power school. It's never been, like, the Skyline Conference is the closest that it got, and that didn't last all that long.
Oh,
and it wasn't
don't
really
get me started on the history of that one. That's another hour and a half that I don't have right now.
I wrote a story about that last year. That was a fun story, man. That is an interesting. Oh, yeah. We can't get into that too much, but there's not a ton of parallels for it. And I think that is part of what contributes to like the constant sense of just kind of anxiety of like, when is the other shoe going to drop? When is the other shoe going to drop? And the truth is, you have students lining up outside of the building to get in for big games, and you have basically a full arena every night. You have a level of local support that is pretty much unparalleled in the mid-major level. There are not a lot of schools that can do this with this level of consistency, this level of support. I mean, the ones that come to mind, like Drake, is usually good. St. Louis has a ton of money and is usually pretty good. Gonzaga, obviously, but Gonzaga is a very, very different thing than Utah State, and also it hasn't been good forever. Gonzaga kind of found its way to being good.
They've tricked everyone to kind of like convince you that they've been good forever because they've been as good as you can remember.
Yeah.
But before that, they weren't that good.
Yeah, I was just reading the story from when Marv Roberts set the free throw attempts record against Gonzaga, and the paper story was written like Utah State won the game by like 10, and the story in the Herald Journal at the time was written like, can you believe that they played these losers to a 10-point game? Are you kidding me? The 10-point win over Gonzaga? This isn't even a real school. Like, that was the way it was being talked about. It's not, there's very few programs that can say this. And you know, the ones, the other ones that can say it are like Duke and Kansas and Kentucky and like the biggest programs in the world.
Foolish to compare ourselves to those, right? Because it's just different. And like, I think I know we're getting distracted here, but I think this is actually a really good point and something that is worth talking about. Utah State is unique. It really, Utah State basketball at least is very, very unique. And like you mentioned, I think that plays into part of the anxiety and part of the confusion and part of just that feeling of uneasiness that fans sometimes get, because there's not a direct comparison. We don't get to look across the state or across our conference to see, oh, it's going to be okay because they're okay. You know, there's a lot of comparisons right now to, you know, the in-state schools or the conference schools. You can't look at Utah State and then look at San Diego State and say, oh, good, San Diego State made it, we're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. That's not what we are. We're not BYU. We're not Utah.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we're not those schools. You know, like we talked about, like, I'm glad Utah State is different. But it also makes it hard because sometimes we don't know what to expect. But if you ever don't know what to expect with this team, just look in the rearview mirror and try to find a stretch of more than 1 year where Utah State underperformed its potential. You're not going to find it. You're really not going to find back-to-back really bad years, at least for a long, long time. And that's an awesome, awesome thing.
Yeah. Yep, and it makes Utah State, as we move into potential candidates here worth knowing, it makes Utah State very attractive to potential coaches.
Yeah. Is there a more attractive mid-major job like out there, do you think? Not like a job that's open, like a job in general. San Diego State, I think, is probably one of the only ones I can think
of. Yeah, there are a few that at least they have more like resources, right? Or like they're in an easier to recruit to location, like San Diego State. If Gonzaga was ever to open, I'm sure that would be highly touted.
Now you're opening a can of worms because you're going to get, you know, the Gonzaga's not a mid-major crowd.
Yeah, but well, they should stop playing in the WCC and join a real conference like the Mountain West.
I mean, it is. I mean, we don't have to go through every mid-major, although, again, we could. And talk about it. But, like, this is Utah State now has built something that is among the most attractive mid-major jobs at any given time.
Yeah,
it's the top tier. If you want to be a good basketball coach, come to Utah State. And again, you know, not to dwell on this too much, but like, look at what the last three coaches have done. Like, clearly they were successful enough to make a ton of money. So it's an attractive job. We're not going to have a hard time replacing it, or filling it. And there are already, you know, a lot of names that we are narrowing down, because this is going to be pretty quickly.
Yeah,
moving pretty quickly.
Yeah. So I wrote a story about some names to know yesterday that is up on the site for subscribers that has a few more names on it than we're going to talk about on this show. This is kind of the pared down list from what I have gathered over the last 24 hours since I finished that story. I do have included here, we're not really going to talk about these guys, but I do want to mention them just because there would be questions about them if we didn't mention them. These are the names that you might see or maybe have seen, but that I don't think are involved or likely for the job. That is a combination of either reading the tea leaves or just being told directly that these guys probably aren't going to be involved. That group would be Bryce Drew, who's making $1 billion at Grand Canyon and is not going to leave for Utah State. Chris Gerlofsen at San Francisco, Tim Miles at San Jose State, Mark Pope at BYU, David Riley at Eastern Washington, Russell Turner at UC Irvine, and Chris Victor at Seattle, as well as any assistant who is not Andy Hill. We're going to talk about Andy Hill. Utah State has not hired, this was something that I pulled, I think, for that story. Utah State has not hired an assistant from outside of the program since it hired T.L. Plain in 1971. He was at Kentucky. Since then, it has promoted from within, I think, 4 times and hired sitting head coaches 6 times. It does not hire assistant coaches from other schools. It just doesn't do that. That's not the way that this job operates. And it hasn't been for, you know, more than 50 years now. It's not going to happen. It would have to be very, very, very different circumstances. Like a guy who had been a successful head coach before and then became an assistant coach or something. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be an assistant coach from another school.
It would have to be the way it happened last time. And it would have to be like a coach at like Kentucky, like an assistant coach at Kentucky, which they wouldn't want it. I don't think we would want it. That's not a route that we're, that's just not how we really do things.
Yeah. I don't know what was going on in 1971 when T.L. Plain was the runner-up to take over for Rupp at Kentucky, and then he didn't get it, and he ended up at Utah State. I don't know what was going on there, but unless T.L. Plain is out there, which I guess the modern comparison, if we're talking about Kentucky top assistants from Kentucky looking to take over a head coaching job somewhere, I guess the comparison would be Kenny Payne, which is not a great... not a great road to go down. I don't think Utah State's going to hire Kenny Payne either. I'll say that. I don't expect he's going to be involved in this. But all of those names you might see, you might have seen, I don't think that those are going to be the next coaches at Utah State for a variety of reasons. Any of those guys stand out to you as needing to be detailed any further than that?
No, not really. There's a couple that I think it's funny that they're on the list. But no, we're good. They're not going to be. Tim Miles is the one that's just he's going to be on the list every year, and it's not going to. It's just not.
Yeah, I will do here real quick a one sentence rundown on why, just so that people have an idea for it. Chris Gerlofsen has a ton of NIL money at San Francisco and is not going to leave unless he gets a really good job, like Power 6 or Power 5 or whatever it's going to be without the Pac-12. He's not going to do that. He has a lot of money there. Tim Miles just went 9-23. Mark Pope does not like BYU and does want to leave. He's not going to leave for Utah State, and I don't think Utah State wants Mark Pope.
No, we don't. I'll go ahead and...
Yeah. David Riley, I think, is going to land at Washington State. I also think that he kind of rubbed some people at Utah State the wrong way. He was early on a candidate, but he's kind of a strange guy, and I don't think that it was a cultural fit. Russell Turner is not a cultural fit with anybody on earth, and Chris Victor just hasn't won enough at Seattle, honestly. I think he could have been a candidate had they had a better season, but they didn't, and them's the breaks. That's the deal. So the names...
Yeah, that's fair, for sure.
Yeah, so the names that leaves us with here, barring a late surprise, which, you know... You can always say I wouldn't expect a surprise because that's the nature of surprises. But I think it's probably going to be one of these four. Honestly, I think it's going to be one of the three here. There are four. I don't think that one of them is really all that serious of a candidate. The four that I have here are Eric Henderson, who is the head coach currently at South Dakota State. Todd Kowalczyk, who is the head coach at Toledo and got some immediate buzz from CBS Sports' Matt Norlander after this job opened. Todd Simon, who's the head coach at Bowling Green, formerly of Southern Utah, and Andy Hill, who I mentioned a second ago in the rundown, currently the associate head coach at Utah State. Where do you want to go first with these guys?
I mean, let's just run through these in order. I think they're all worth talking about. So, yeah, I mean, let's talk with Eric. Let's talk Eric Henderson at South Dakota State. And by the way, I like all of these. There's not a single name on here that I don't dislike.
Yeah.
They all are very different.
Yes. Yes. They're four pretty different guys. So Henderson is, he's an interesting one. I think that if you're trying to go for the Sprinkle, Odom, Smith mold, he is the one on this list who would most fit that billing. I think that Todd Simon could kind of fit that billing. We're going to talk about Todd Simon in more detail though. Eric Henderson's he's a younger guy. He graduated from Wayne State in 2000, so he's late 40s, around the same age as Sprinkle. He is I do like this. This is a tick in his direction because this coaching tree is tremendous. He's a Greg McDermott guy. Greg McDermott guys are awesome basketball coaches, just like pretty much across the board. His coaching tree is unbelievably strong. I don't know if I have immediate access to who all has come off of that tree, but it is a murderer's row of coaches who he has developed and sent on to head coaching jobs. I think he played for McDermott at Wayne State, and then he coached for him briefly at Iowa State as like a video guy.
I don't hate that at all.
Yeah. So after doing that, he spent some time in the high school ranks. He was a girls basketball coach at Wayne High School. He spent some time at Iowa State, as I said, as a graduate manager, as a video guy, as kind of just a do-it-all assistant. He went back to the high school ranks. He was at Burlington Catholic Central High School, which is in Wisconsin. I believe TJ Otzelberger also was the head coach there at one point, which is just an interesting, he's a Greg McDermott guy as well. And then after that, he went up to North Dakota State, and then he jumped after 2 years at North Dakota State to South Dakota State to join Otzelberger's staff there. And then when Otzelberger left for the head coaching job at UNLV, he took over at South Dakota State in 2019. He is, if Wikipedia is to be believed, and the records are sometimes a little bit shaky on Wikipedia, but I think that his are right. He's 109-48 in five seasons at South Dakota State, 65-15 in the Summit League, which is impressive. They've won it four times. They've been to the NCAA tournament twice in the last 3 years. They were 30-5 in his best year, which was 21-22. They went 22-13 this year, won the league, won the conference championship in the tournament, advanced as a number 15 seed, lost to Iowa State in the first round. The main appeal here is twofold. One, he's young. He's a sitting head coach. Yeah. He's a young sitting head coach. And two, his offense has been really good in the past. It was a little bit quieter these last 2 years. The teams in general were not quite, I think his best 3 years really were his first 3 years, which is a little bit troubling because we know obviously who built at least some of that roster was Otzelberger. But he's still been to the tournament two times in the last 3 years. He had number 14 adjusted offense in KenPom in 2022, 39 in 2021, and 46 in 2020. They shoot the cover off of the basketball. That was still true this year. They were 19th in effective field goal percentage this season. It's not super up tempo, but just a lot of ball movement. They shoot a lot of threes. He is consistently really good at developing guard play. They had a guy this year who's now in the transfer portal, Zeke Mayo, who was excellent for them at point guard. A lot of shooters have obviously come through that program. I think people have a pretty good idea in general for what the deal is at South Dakota State, and he is very much an adherent to that. They rebound the ball pretty well on defense. They run a nice offense. I think it's a good system that he has there. And they win a lot of games. They win a lot of games consistently in the Summit League. I wouldn't compare him directly to Sprinkle because it's a very different style of basketball. But like personality wise and background wise, that's the easiest comparison, is that this would be continuing sort of the same mold that they have gone with for the last couple hires, is guy who was really successful, young guy who was really successful at a lower tier job, who is ready to jump up and take over a program at a higher level, is the pitch with Henderson.
Yeah, if you're looking to, you know, do the same thing that you just did with with really all three of your past coaches, is get somebody on a discount and then sell them for more in a couple of years.
Yeah,
I really like Henderson. If that's the model that Diana Sabo wants to lean into, which I'm not against, by the way, I think there's honestly some value to that, especially drawing on what we just talked about, like what makes this program strong. I'm not against that model. It's risky, but it's also risky to give somebody a lifetime contract. That's Kentucky. So I don't hate it. I like this. I like Eric Henderson a lot. If it's not at Utah State, it's going to be somewhere. You're going to see this guy taking a, you made the comparison to Sprinkle. He's going to take a pretty similar career trajectory. Might not be as atmospheric or stratospheric as Sprinkle, because he kind of caught lightning in a bottle, but this guy's going places for sure. I would not mind if he made a quick stop in Logan on his way to wherever it is that he's going. You made the connection to TJ Otzelberger. He coached at UNLV for like a year, I think, for literally like 1 or 2 years or something, and then he's now the coach of Iowa State. Mm-hmm. I could see a pretty similar thing coming to Utah State for a while and then up in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Again, I know that our fan, some of the fans, Utah State fans, are getting sick of that. That's not the worst thing in the world if that's what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, if you bring him in and he wins so much that after 2 years he's hired to replace Greg Gard at Wisconsin or Ben Johnson at Minnesota, it means that he won a lot. And ultimately, yeah, that's that's what Utah State is looking for above all else, yep, is that it wants to win basketball games.
Absolutely.
So that is, I think that he is kind of the leader in the clubhouse for that archetype of coach. David Riley, again, would have maybe made sense in that role as well, but I don't think it was going to work personality wise. I do think he's a good coach. I don't know that it was going to, I don't know that that partnership would have paid off either party. Next up here, we have Todd Kowalczyk, who I mentioned earlier, got some very, very immediate buzz, kind of a surprising immediate amount of buzz for this job once it opened nationally. He's been the head coach at Toledo for, it's been a while. I think 14 years. He took over there in 2010. Before that, he had a long run as well at Green Bay. Very strong career record, 409 wins already to 290 losses. That's a 58.5% win percentage in hard jobs. I mean, Green Bay is a really hard job, and when he took over, yeah, it was in a bad place, and he turned it. By the time he was done, his last 2 years, they had back-to-back 22 win seasons and CBI appearances, which is hard to do there. And then he parlayed that into the job at Toledo, needed really only the 1 year to start get going. They were 19-17 in his second year after a 4-28 start. They have been to the CIT once, the CBI once, and the NIT four times. They have won at least a share of the MAC championship in 8 seasons, I believe, including the outright regular season championship, or at least a share of the regular season championship. I don't know if it's outright, in each of the last 4 seasons. They were 20-12 this year. Before that, 27-8, 26-8, and 21-9. They have not lost more than 4 conference games in a season since 2019, which is really impressive. And before that, they were 13-5, 13-5 in the MAC in 2018, 19, and 2017, 18. 6 20-plus win seasons in the last 7 years. The knock on him, I'll get to the knock in a second. I'm going to finish up the positives here. He runs a good offense. He consistently runs a good offense. And the idea is essentially he's 57. He's on the older end as coaching candidates go. He was an assistant for a long time. He was a Tom Crean assistant for a bit. He spent some time with other staffs before that. I think he was actually with a young Jim Boylan, who was the coach of the Bulls there a little bit ago. I think he was with him at New Hampshire in the 90s, which is just Strange.
Oh, wow.
So it's been a minute, but he's you know, extremely established head coach. I think that the idea is, you know, he's 57, he's been around, he's been a head coach for 22 years. This would probably be a last stop for him. I don't think that he would really be looking to move beyond Utah State. I think he would love the job. I think he would love to be in a spot where he has consistent fan support. Frankly, you just don't get a ton of that in the MAC. It doesn't matter how good your program is. It's a one-bid league, and the MAC doesn't turn out fans for any sport at this point, doesn't turn out people for football, doesn't turn out people for basketball. It's just, it's a tough spot to be in. There's a lot of teams in not a lot of populated areas at this point.
I think
that he would really like to, I think he'd really like to have a good job at some point instead of turning a bad job into a good job. And so you could maybe get a guy who wants to finish out his career. Doesn't mean that he would be coasting into retirement. Just means that he's getting to the point where he wants to have a forever home. And I don't really know that he wants to spend forever at Toledo winning 20-some games and then not getting to the NCAA tournament in a one-bid league. That's a tough life to live.
I was going to say the same thing. Like, you go 14-4 in conference.
Yeah.
You want to play in the tournament. That doesn't happen in the Mountain West. I think you would like that.
Yeah. And so I think that that's very, very appealing to him and to what he is after. The question, of course, would be on Utah State's side of that equation, but that is his skill set, is that he's very stable. He's a very good program builder. He's an extremely strong recruiter. He has had a ton of talent at Toledo, and I think he's really only made better by the transfer portal. He's a guy who can really play that game. Doesn't have a ton of connections or really any connections to the West, but in the portal era, you know, this past Utah State team, you think about where the guys were from, there were not a ton of guys from the West on this roster. You can have connections all over the place and build a roster in the current world of college basketball. They have a ton of talent. They usually have really good offenses. They were fifth in adjusted offense last year, 74th this year. They've been in the top 75 consistently since 2014, basically. And he's won a ton of basketball games. And that's really, I mean, if you win a ton of basketball games and you have an appealing offense and you recruit talent, there's not a ton more that you could ask of a guy. The issue here, the knock on him, the thing that I think holds this up and honestly is why he is a candidate to begin with and not coaching a Big Ten team and why he's been at Toledo for 14 years is that he has never been to the NCAA tournament. In 22 years as a head coach, he's never gone. He's never won an NIT game. He's won two postseason games ever, like non-conference tournament postseason games. He's been snake bitten in those spots. He has not managed to get over that hump. He's been to the conference championship, I think, in the MAC three times. He's lost all three games. For whatever reason, he's just not been able to do it. It's a one-bid league. He's never gone to the NCAA tournament. And that will keep a guy in a job, no matter how good he might be, that will keep a guy in a job indefinitely, because March gets, I would say, way, way, way too much importance in coaching searches. And your success in March is often the thing that will get you jobs and the thing that will lose you any opportunity to get new jobs. And he has just, I think he's just fallen on the wrong side of that. In a multi-bid league, I don't think it would be a huge issue, but it is an understandable concern that people have long had about him. And Utah State is not the first school to come knocking and be, you know, asking like, hey, why haven't you been to the NCAA tournament in 22 years as a head coach? It's not the first time he's heard that question. He also would love to know why he hasn't been to the NCAA tournament. I don't think that he has some fatal flaw as a coach. I think he's just been unlucky. He's been on the wrong side of it every time, and that stinks, and it wears on a guy, and I could understand absolutely why he would want to leave the MAC and go to a much better job.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I actually changed my mind on this guy mid you talking. First of all, I love this guy because he kind of looks like Michael Keaton a little bit in some pictures, and that's where I'll leave that. It's a vague thing, and you only see it sometimes, but it's a fun optical illusion. I like this guy a lot. He has a lot of really good experience. He has a resume that almost looks like, I don't know how to say this nicely, but like the Walmart version of Stu Morrill.
Yeah.
He just kind of has dominated at kind of a lower league without much postseason success, which Stu Morrill, I think, dominated at a small league and then at a medium league and then had a little bit of postseason success, but it's kind of similar. He's stayed at both of his stops for a long time. I really, really like that. I think the idea with this guy is, like you said, you bring him in and he stays for a while. I think we should go the exact opposite way. He just wants to get to the NCAA tournament so he can finally get whatever job he wants. We can get him there easily because that's what we do at Utah State. We go to the NCAA tournament. I see this as a 2-year hire. He gets the monkey off his back. He moves back to the Midwest where he clearly likes to be. He's really never been outside of the Midwest. I've changed my mind. I would take this guy for a year and then just send him on his merry way. However, I'm not the one making the decision, thank goodness. And I don't think any of the parties involved would be interested in that. I do think that the drawbacks that you mentioned are probably what keeps him out of this job and others. I'm not concerned with the no connections in the West thing. It's one of those things that jumps off the page at you. Like you do notice it. But like you said, I don't care. I mean, you're gonna get there's some local guys that are just coming to Utah State anyways. And that's always been true, always will be true. And then at the end of the day, you got to be able to recruit, East Coast, California, Texas. It's different than football, but at the end of the day, you got to go where the talent is. So
Yep.
I'm not as worried about that, but the no postseason success is a bit of a worry. The one thing I do really, really like about this guy, in all seriousness though, he gets better with like everywhere he's gone, he gets better the longer he stays there. And that is very, very impressive. You look at what he's done at Toledo. He's always been kind of good. He was always at the top of the conference, took a couple of years, in the middle of his time there, second, is finishing second, fifth, and then third. But then he turned it right around in the past 4 years. He has won the outright title of the regular season. I like that. I just don't know if I've seen enough, and I don't think he quite fits what Diana Sabo will be looking for. I think she probably wants to go more of the Smith Odom sprinkle route. I don't know that they're ready to try to settle down with somebody, especially somebody that hasn't kind of proven that he can win in the postseason. We are getting to the point, Diana Sabo has mentioned this on Twitter, at least, other places as well, I'm sure. The next step for Utah State is to continue to win in the postseason. That's going to be a big question that comes up in interviews is how do you plan to get to the second weekend? We've done everything else. This program on autopilot can do almost everything else. We need a head coach to come in and get that last mile and get us to the second round, or through the second round into the second weekend. I don't know that this guy can. He hasn't convinced me. I don't think he can convince Diana Sabo of that in an interview. I do like Todd Kowalczyk. I don't know if I like him for this job.
I think he is a I think he is a very real candidate. I think that Matt Norlander doesn't get that for no reason, basically. That's coming from somewhere. He is a candidate. There is interest there, but those concerns are very real, and it is, that's a stumbling block, and it has been for him for every job he's interviewed for, however many of those might be in the last decade plus. His resume, I think, is deserving of a bigger job than Toledo. I just don't know that Utah State will be the one that is that step. I think it could be. I do very much think that he is in consideration. I don't know that I don't know that I would have him as the favorite right now. But I think that the reaction to that name being floated, the pushback against it, is a little bit unfair to him because he does recruit a level of talent, and he's had a level of talent where at some point, man, he'd win a postseason game. If you bring in that kind of talent, you'd win. Like, it's just he's just been
He would win here
yeah
for sure.
he's just been unlucky, I think, more than anything else. I don't think that he's like incapable of coaching in the postseason. It's just that they're in a one bid league, and if you lose one game, you're done. And that's a tough way to live, and Utah State knows
Yeah,
that.
we know that. I'll
But
say on this guy, I would have loved him to replace Stu Morrill back in the day. I think that would have been like a really, really nice fit at the time, and I think he would have done well in what the Mountain West has become. I just don't know that the timing's right on this guy. And again, that's such a vibes-based thing for me to say for my podcast chair, but I really think that's what it comes down to. I don't know that the timing's right. His resume at this point in time doesn't quite match what our job description is at this point in time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really like him, though. I think he's a really good coach.
Yep. Next up here, Todd Simon, who also in the MAC is the head coach at Bowling Green. Most people know him from his stint as the head coach at Southern Utah, where he spent 7 years, I believe, and had a lot of success there. He really kind of won at a level that program had not seen in a long time and is not accustomed to seeing. After two rebuilding years, he jumped up to 17-17 in the 2018-19 season, took him to the CIT, then 17-15, and then they really broke through 20-4 in 2021-22, 23-12 in 2022, and then 24-13 in his last year before he jumped to Bowling Green, where he went in his lone season so far, 20-14. They were 10-8 in the MAC. KenPom did not like that team at all, but they did win 20 games. that is worth noting. He's won 20 games in each of the last four seasons. He kind of splits the difference, I think, a little bit between the true up-and-comers, like the just guys climbing the ladder, young guys, you know, and the more established, you know, could maybe stay for a couple more years. He's sort of the compromise candidate, I think, between the two. He's not from the area originally. He's actually from Michigan. He graduated from Central Michigan in 2003, but he is a younger guy. He's 43, and he spent most of his career in the West. He was at Pepperdine. He was the associate head coach and then later the head coach of the now defunct Findlay Prep. Did not realize that Findlay Prep was not operating anymore, but I guess it closed down in 2019. Famously one of the best high school basketball, I don't know if high school, prep basketball programs maybe not high school. I think maybe that was probably part of the problem for why they closed down. But probably. A prep powerhouse in Henderson, Nevada. He was there for 7 years. I don't think that he had anything to do with the shady dealings that were going on behind the scenes at that school. I won't play. He was just coaching basketball. And then he was at UNLV for three seasons under, I believe under Dave Rice, I think. Yes, under Dave Rice. And he was kind of an ace recruiter there. And then in 2016, he actually took over as the interim head coach when Rice was fired after an 0-3 start to conference play. So he took over as the interim coach. And then after that season, he jumped to Southern Utah and became the head coach there in 2015-2016, ran through the record there. So he spent most of his time as a coach on the West Coast, despite not being from the area. I know that he really likes Utah. He really likes the area. I know that he's really interested in this job, and I can absolutely understand the appeal. He runs a very, very, very up-tempo system. They were 16th in adjusted tempo last year, top 40 three times before that. It is fast. It is usually pretty good on offense, not quite as strong as some of the other guys who we've talked about here, but three top 100 finishes to close out his time at Southern Utah. He really kind of made something out of nothing there. He is known for having really skilled, really good bigs pretty consistently. Pretty much every year they rebound the ball well, they get to the free throw line. This year was kind of an exception. They usually shoot the ball pretty well. Good offense, not quite great offense. They shoot a lot of threes. And then the defense, I think, is sort of, it's dynamic. It's a little bit more adjustable. He really kind of takes on the personality of whatever the team is that he has recruited, which I think plays well in the current way that college basketball is designed. You kind of have to be able to do that. But there's not necessarily, like with Henderson or you know, even with Kowalczyk, there's not necessarily like a clearly identified skill on the, like the KenPom resume. They're usually pretty good at rebounding, and then the rest is kind of, you know, we'll figure it out as we go and we see what we have here, which is fine. I know we really would be interested in the job. He's very much interested in going back to the state of Utah. This is a job that he coveted last year and didn't end up getting, and then landed at Bowling Green. Todd Simon's interested in the job. The issue here is I do not really think that the job is interested in Todd Simon, if I'm going to be honest. I could absolutely see the appeal. I can understand why people have taken to this. I think that his resume is impressive. I think that you could very easily talk yourself into this. I don't know that Utah State has at this point, and I think that we're quickly running out of time that it would be able to do that. I don't know that Todd Simon is a serious candidate right now, whether people agree with that or not. That's where it's at currently, as of what I have heard on, a couple days into this search being public. Todd Simon's not been involved at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say, I am also interested in this job. The job is not interested in me, not by a long shot. Now, that, to be fair to Todd Simon, that comparison is absolutely insulting to him and what he's done. He does have a little bit of everything, and I can see why on paper you would be drawn to this guy. He has connections in the West. He hasn't had a ton of postseason success. He's won a couple of games in, like, the CIT, but he hasn't been in the NCAA tournament. But the thing that he has that Kowalczyk doesn't, he hasn't had 22 years to do it, and Kowalczyk has.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's as big a knock on him as it is for Kowalczyk. So Simon has really, really good connections in the West, or I don't know about good connections, probably good connections. He's been out here for a long time.
Yes, he has good connections. I'll say yes, he has. Yeah. He is a well-known and well-thought-of recruiter in the West.
Yeah, and he is a good recruiter, good developer, all that. I think the problem with this guy is, like, he does have a little bit of everything. I just don't think he has whatever it is that Diana Sabo was looking for. I think he's kind of caught in between. You know, you made the comparison that he kind of bridges that gap between two things that they could be looking for. The other way to look at that is you're neither archetype of what we're looking for, and I think that might be where he lands. Again, unfortunate, with all these guys on the list are good coaches and most will not get this job. I just don't see this one. I'm not sold on him. He's a good coach. It would be funny for us to go and take a coach after 1 year at his school, after all the the complaining that's what happened here. But I don't see that happening.
Yeah. I think maybe if things break differently than Utah State is currently expecting, and it has to circle back around, he would be among that group. But just from what I've gathered, I don't think he's in the finalists right now. I think in a different world, he could be. I think had he stayed at Southern Utah and had another really strong season this year, he would have a better case than he does right now. Going to Bowling Green for a year and just being kind of decent there, in the long term, I think could pay off for him, because he probably just get to the UNLV job once that opens here at some point. But for this specific timing, for these circumstances, 20-14 in your first year and being just kind of fine, I don't think plays quite as well as if you were an 8-year head coach at Southern Utah who closed out strong with 4 straight 20-win seasons. Fair or not, that's the way that it is. And I think that the timing again here might not work out exactly the way that you'd maybe want it to. If you're Todd Simon or a Todd Simon supporter, I don't know.
Hey, like you said, UNLV might have a job open. There's probably going to be some job openings here in the state of Utah at some point.
Steve Alford might end up at Oklahoma State. Maybe you just go to Nevada.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, New Mexico might have a job opening. If he wants to get to the state of Utah or to the Mountain West, he's going to have some chances within the next couple of years. There's going to be some job openings there. So
yeah,
keep trying.
Yeah,
keep trying, Todd Simon. Good luck, man.
Yeah, and maybe it does come back around, and maybe he does get himself more involved at Utah State. But right now, I don't think he is.
I don't think so. I will say though, I would not be surprised to see this guy in the spectrum within the next 3 years. I just don't think he's wearing the Utah State quarters yet.
Yeah,
yep. But I bet he makes his way out here.
Yep. Yeah, something to keep an eye on, a name worth watching there. And then the last one that we have on the board here, of the guys who we're going to talk about in detail, is a familiar name, a familiar face for Utah State. That would be associate head coach, recently promoted to associate head coach. He was an assistant coach when he was hired and then promoted in January. Associate head coach Andy Hill, who, even beyond just the year that he has spent here in Logan, familiar in the area. He has been around this part of the country for a long time, for two decades before this. He was with Sprinkle and basically the entire rest of this staff at Montana State last season. Before that, he spent a year at New Mexico, I believe under Richard Pitino, if memory serves. I think he was there in his first year, maybe. And then he left for Montana State. Before that, he was famously at... he was an assistant at Utah for 10 years. He was really kind of the defensive mastermind behind a lot of those defenses and a lot of those teams. There were some really, really good defenses in that bunch. Not a perfect program during that time by any means, but they had some really, really strong defenses, and Hill was the... He is the guy behind that. He was the guy behind Montana State's defense last year, Utah State's defense this year. He was at Montana before going to Utah. He was with Coach K for that whole stretch for people curious. And then before that, he spent a little bit of time. He was at Whitworth College, I believe shortly after graduating from Eastern Washington. He was at Lewis Clark State College. And then he was, he was a GA at Eastern Washington as well in the early 2000s. That is the very, very quick rundown on his history, on him, the coach, and his actual skill set as a coach. I've alluded to it. He is kind of thought of as the mad scientist type, the mastermind behind Utah State's defense. I will say there are very, very few coaches, assistant coaches in America who are as well thought of as basketball minds as Andy Hill is. He is extremely well respected for his ability to coach and think about basketball. You can see his impact on Utah State this season defensively. He did a lot of the game planning. He did a lot of the scouting. They divvied up those responsibilities, but he did a lot of that stuff, especially defensively. He's thought of as a very, very strong teacher. He connects well with players. That's kind of the skill set that you get with Andy Hill. I don't know that he is quite the, promoter, quite the out, you know, out front charismatic face that like Danny Sprinkle is. I just don't know that it's a different personality. That's not to say that he can't do it. It's just that he hasn't had to. And so that would be an adjustment, but talking about him as a basketball coach, you're not going to hear a lot of people say any bad words at all about Andy Hill. He's a very, very, very skilled basketball coach. Very, very well thought of.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. This it's no secret. Like, he's well liked among players and staff. That is true of Sprinkle's entire staff. I mean, top to bottom, it's likable dudes who just love basketball. Like, that is one thing that we talked about all year long. I don't think we've ever had like a staff top to bottom that was just ball coaches, you know? And that's, I that probably says a lot more about Sprinkle and his ability to put together a staff, but it certainly says a lot about Andy Hill as we talk about him. Great basketball coach. The knock on him, I don't know if it would be considered a knock or just kind of a stray from the pattern that has been set. We haven't done this in the past. We have not promoted an assistant coach in a while. The last time we did, it didn't work. That's a silly reason not to do something in the future, but it does stray a little bit from the pattern that we've set in the past and had success with in the past, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that will be, I mean, that is the concern, that and that he hasn't been a head coach. Those are the concerns. Is nobody wants another Tim, and it's unfortunate, but that is the you know, obstacle you have to get over if you're an assistant coach vying for this job full time. And that is an issue that other assistant coaches before him have run into.
It certainly is. And we saw it last year, like, pretty up close, I think.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. You have to message that the right way. And Utah State fans, I think, are understandably very concerned about a repeat of that. The thing I will say, to not necessarily shut that down, because I can totally understand, like you said, I totally understand the concern there. It is not hard to the most recent example, and a lot of examples of this around the country and at Utah State have not gone well. What I will say about this specifically for Utah State is that it is apples and oranges comparing the program when Tim Duryea took it over to what it is right now. The roster, the infrastructure, the place in the Mountain West, the level of potential continuity, the money around the program, all of it. It is all just, it is a different world now than it was then. That was a program when that change happened, when Stu retired, that was a program in need of a reset that it did not get until Craig Smith arrived. Right now is not a program in need of a reset. They're fine. They're doing just fine. they just want a tournament game.
Cruising right along.
2015 or whatever it was, 2015 Utah State did not win a tournament game and wasn't super close to winning a tournament game. It was not that level of program that was passed along. That's a pretty key difference here, is that if you're going to be learning on the fly how to be a head coach, which I don't know that it would necessarily be a huge learning curve. Andy Hill associate head coach was not just a title. I'm not going to say too much. I'll just say Andy Hill has seen a lot of what it takes to be a head coach this season. And has done a lot of the things that it would require a head coach to do. He's been around. He's been around the block. He's seen in different programs. He's seen the way that different coaches operate. He's worked with a lot of assistants. It would not necessarily be a huge adjustment for him, and the program that he is that he's staring down the potential of taking over, that any of these coaches are, is a lot stronger now than it was the last time Utah State did this. And I think that is the easiest way to explain why in the world would they even be thinking about doing this, given the time that it happened last. The reason is that the time that it happened last and this time are not the same times. It is different. It just is. It's a different world now than it was then.
It's completely different. I would even say like the expectations to a certain degree are different. I think back then there was still an expectation to win, but there was kind of an expectation to win in a certain way. I'm not sure we were quite ready when we went from Stu Morrill to Tim Duryea for what we've seen since then.
Yeah.
Craig Smith, as you mentioned, came in and kind of reset the program. Since then, we've seen three different coaches win in three different ways. I think we're now to a point where we still expect to win. We don't care how you do it. You don't have to look like Stu Morrill.
Yeah.
And so I do think that the expectations are there that whoever we hire, and in this case, we're talking about promoting somebody from an assistant coach to the head coach, which is something we would be apprehensive of doing for this very reason. If this happens, we're giving him the reins and saying, go win basketball games. We're not telling him, go be Danny Sprinkle. And I think that's what we were kind of telling Tim Duryea at the time, is like, hey, go be Stu Morrill. That's a tough, tough thing to do.
Yeah.
The program's in a different place now. It's won in different ways. So it's completely different. It is apples and oranges.
Yeah. And like, even if this was to come to pass and it had the same result, it would still be apples to oranges. It would still not be every coaching circumstance, every hire circumstance is its own thing. There is no, like, if there was a 100% way to hire a coach or a 0% way to hire a coach, there would be no such thing as a search. Everyone would do the exact same thing every single time, and it would work every time. The thing that makes these that causes searches to happen is that there is no such thing as a guarantee ever. There's just not one, and there's no such thing as a sure failure either. It's not a crapshoot for Utah State, because it's been pretty consistent over the last 100 years basically. But there's not a set rule here of how things work or how things don't work. Every coach is different. Every circumstance is different. And I do think that is important to understand for this, is that, like, yes, he is a candidate. He's a real candidate. He has interviewed. He is among the finalists for the job. That is the truth. And that is not like the history is not going to, it can't stop a school or anybody from considering the future. It is, they're not related. They're just not. The past results do not predict future results in any meaningful way in anything, especially not when you're talking about people.
I mean, we saw the opposite on the football field, right? Like we thought we could replicate what Gary Anderson did, and it didn't work. So
yeah, it's just
the past does not necessarily predict the future. That's not how this works.
College basketball is effectively a living organism that is constantly changing, and that is just it's kind of throw your hands up and hope for the best. I don't think that the past of results of a different guy in a different circumstance should be in any way disqualifying for Andy Hill, who had nothing to do with what happened with Tim Duryea, nothing at all. maybe Utah State and Utah played a year that was going on. I don't even know. But beyond that, he had no impact on it. He was doing something else. He's a different guy. And so
he's maybe responsible for one of those losses. Yeah, if Utah happened to beat us during that time.
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know. And if so, obviously that, wipe him off the board complete. How dare you? you, how could you do this to us? I want to give that kind of disclaimer of I understand the concern here, but you just can't operate that way. That's not how people work.
I would also add, I think it's worth noting that there's just one extra layer of nuance to this. And that is Danny Sprinkle was hired by, again, we've talked about this on this show. He was hired by Jerry Bovee. Jerry Bovee's still with the program, but Diana Sabo has come in and is in the midst of installing her own program here. Danny Sprinkle was not a Diana Sabo hire. So by extension, Andy Hill was not a Diana Sabo hire. Yes. And again, I don't know what that means either way, but that is probably just one thing to keep in mind. Like this, it wouldn't just be like a straight promotion from the person that hired this guy. This guy was hired by Danny Sprinkle, but under the Jerry Bovee kind of temporary umbrella that was set up at the time.
Yes. So the pitch here is what I'll get to. I've talked about him as a coach. We've done the disclaimer. The idea here, I think, is pretty obvious. I think people can kind of understand what the thinking would be with this. And this is usually why you promote from within if you do that.
It's the same pitch she was last year, probably,
yes.
Right? Like
yes, absolutely. It's continuity. The pitch is continuity, and the pitch is not the thing that Hill needs to do this, to get the job, would be a level of continuity beyond just, oh, I can keep some players around, right? Keeping some players around is not all that meaningful in the current landscape of college basketball. I can keep a couple guys around, doesn't do anything for you right
now. If anything, it's less value. It means less because of what he was able to do. I mean, he was part of a coaching staff that brought in no player. He returned nobody.
Yeah.
So it has to be more than that.
Yes. And so the pitch for Hill and the path for Hill is almost full, if not full, continuity. That's what he would need to pull this off, is guarantees that the roster would be pretty much intact, that the staff would be pretty much intact, that the boosters are behind him, that they can keep it rolling pretty much the same as it was. And obviously he would pair that as well with, I think, aspirations that would not extend terribly far beyond Logan. He likes Utah. He's lived in Utah for a large portion of his life. I don't really think that this would be a case where you're all that worried about losing this guy within a year or two. I think that there would be legitimately some continuity here, long-term continuity, not Stew level, because that's probably never going to happen again. It's just not the way that college basketball works anymore. But I don't think it would be a one-year kind of thing. And so that's the pitch. If he can pull that off, if he can come with those kind of guarantees, then you can understand how that would be very, very attractive. Utah State just won a tournament game. And if you can keep pretty much together a tournament winning roster, a team that won a tournament game for the first time in two decades at Utah State and that won the outright Mountain West Championship, and you add a staff into that would be, if you can keep the staff intact, if you can do all that, that's a very, very, very attractive pitch. And so that's going to be the question for Andy Hill. And that is going to be, that's the offer that if he can do that, he could make. And that's kind of where we're at with the wait and see. And I think that is, you can kind of connect that to some of the lack of transfer portal stuff is wait and see. Let's see where this goes. And, you know, if full continuity is on the table, full continuity is really hard to beat. And so we'll see. We'll see what that looks like. It's harder to do than it is to say. It is hard to keep everybody.
That is true.
It is hard to keep everybody in one place when the season ends. It's just hard to do. But that's the path, and you know, we'll see. We'll see where Utah State goes with this. I think that there are good options on the board. I think there are really strong names on the board. I would not really have any issue with any of the four guys we just talked about. I don't, you know, I'm not going to go and make a pick because I don't really, my pick doesn't matter. I'm not the one making the hire. I think that Utah State's in a good spot here. Utah State has more resources right now than it has ever had before in basketball. It can do some serious damage here. In a positive way, damage to the rest of the Mountain West, I guess.
For sure.
And it has the organization, it has the leadership to do that. It's just a matter of let's see what comes out of the hat. And I, like I said earlier, I think it'll be sooner than later that you will have an answer, and Utah State will have a basketball coach, and we'll move on from there.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. This is going to be moving pretty quickly. I think when it comes to Andy Hill versus the field, I guess, just to wrap up my thoughts on him, I think the question that Diana Sabo is answering is one that we talked about earlier in the show. And that is, where does she believe the continuity will come from? Because one way or another, this program will continue to be successful. And that's not to slight the head coach head coaches that we've had, or the coaches that we will have. This program will be successful. Diana Sabo has a very tough job now deciding what's the biggest part of that. Is that going to come from the coaching staff? And is there a chance that we can get Andy Hill to continue the success that he's had? Or do we rely more on the resources that you mentioned and the things that we talked about earlier in the show? Is that what we rely on for continuity? One way or another, this team's going to win. So I think that's what it comes down to with Andy Hill, is where do you get that continuity? Where do you get that continued success? Do you get it from somebody on the staff currently, or do you get it the way that you have gotten it in the past? And then in terms of just those other three, I'm with you. I would take any of these three. I think all three would be successful. I think all three would win a tournament game here at Utah State. I don't think you can go wrong, but you know, I've said that before and I've been wrong. So just outside of even those three and all four of the names we've talked about, Utah State basketball is doing fine. You mentioned the resources that we have. It's more than ever before. We have more momentum probably than ever before. At this point, we have 100 years of momentum. I'm not worried about where the program is going to be. I'm just excited to see who's going to be leading it next year.
Yep. We will leave it there. We will talk to you all very soon, probably with some news about resolving this whole thing. So we will talk to you all then.